The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. It's time to bring out the Better Worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week we are speaking with best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday folks just like you whose small acts make a big difference in the world. We call them Better Worldians. And speaking of Better Worldians, let me now introduce you to my co-hosts, Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 30 years. She's also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. And now here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you today to share all the good that's being done in the world. Now, let me also introduce Gregory Hansel. Gregory has a background in philosophy and world religions, and most importantly, has spent over 15 years at the intersection of technology, social causes, and big ideas.
Hi, this is Greg. Thank you all for joining us today here at Better Worldians Radio. Let me first just tell you a bit about my dad, Ray, who you just heard from. He's a serial entrepreneur who successfully founded and with Mary Sue took public a national marketing firm. Giving back's always been really important to Dad, who supports cancer research, disabled children, and disadvantaged families, among many other causes. By the way, we're the family team that created a popular social game on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charities. To date, over 13 million good deeds have been done in A Better World, including over 90,000 just this week alone. And in the month of January, we're supporting Operation Warm, a charity that provides brand new coats for children in need. This week on Better Worldians Radio, we are discussing loving yourself first.
Joining us today is Laurie Duchesne. Laurie is the founder of Tiny Buddha, a community blog that features stories and insights from readers all over the globe. She runs the site as a group effort because she believes we all have something to teach and something to learn. Since it launched in 2009, Tiny Buddha has grown into one of the most popular inspirational sites on the web with more than 2 million monthly readers. Laurie is the author of Tiny Buddha, Simple Wisdom for Life's Hard Questions, Tiny Buddha's Guide to Loving Yourself, and the Tiny Wisdom ebook series. She's also co-founder of the online course Recreate Your Life Story, Change the Script, and Be the Hero. Laurie joins us today to talk about how you, before you can show love to the world, how you can must show love to yourself first. Laurie, it's great to have you with us today on Better Worldians Radio. Welcome aboard.
Thank you so much. It's great to be part of the show.
Well, thank you for joining us. I have to start by sort of asking about your website and your books. They have a very interesting title that many people know about already, Tiny Buddha. So can you tell us a little bit about that name?
Sure. Tiny Buddha started on Twitter before I launched the site. So at first I saw the name as a metaphor for small pieces of wisdom, 140 characters, actually, to be exact. So that was the thought at first. But over time, I began to see the name as sort of representative of the spirit behind the site. You know, as you mentioned in the beginning, it's a place where everyone's, you know, both a student and a teacher. It's a place where anyone can share what they've been through and what they've learned. So really, I think of it now as sort of an idea of the tiny Buddha in all of us. Sort of all of us have this inner wisdom that we can access, and the site's a place for us to share it and connect through it.
A tiny Buddha in all of us. What a wonderful way to put that. And how did you get started sending out these one inspirational quotes a day that this whole thing began with? How did that come about?
Well, you know, in the beginning, I was actually kind of anti-Twitter. I wasn't really active on social media sites, and I thought that with Twitter, you had to narrate your life as it happened. You know, you'd have to sort of say, I just cut my bangs, or I'm going out to lunch with so-and-so. And I thought to myself, I'd rather tell people about my life when we met up in person, as opposed to sort of, using Twitter as a digital breadcrumb trail, if you will. But eventually a friend of mine sort of opened my eyes to the possibilities with Twitter. You know, I thought it was all about answering the question, what are you doing? Which is, you know, that is the question that was on there. But I realized that really anyone could decide what questions they wanted to answer with what they were tweeting. And for me, I knew the questions I wanted to ask would be the hard ones. Like, you know, what does it take to be happy? Or how can we move on and let go of the past? How can we love and accept ourselves, you know, flaws and all? I had spent most of my earlier life, a lot of my younger life in my teens and early 20s, struggling with depression and self-loathing and an eating disorder. And so I appreciated that I could use Twitter to share thoughts that helped me and were helping me. And in doing this, using Twitter in this way to share inspiring quotes and words of wisdom, I could do something small but meaningful to make a positive difference in other people's lives. That was something that was huge to me, to be able to do a tiny thing like that, especially since I was working a couple different jobs at the time, neither of which were very meaningful to me. This was a small step in a new direction. So that's how I got started in tweeting the quotes.
Okay, and this eventually evolved into the popular website, tinybuddha.com. Tell us about the site and what it offers to the world.
Okay, sure. So as I mentioned before, it is a community blog, and it's a place where anybody could share a story from their life and life lessons that came from it. And when I launched the site, I had previously run my own personal development blog for a very short amount of time, which was focused more on my experiences and my insights. And I realized pretty quickly I didn't like the feeling of that. I didn't want it to have a site where I felt like, okay, I have all the answers, and, you know, where it was kind of like me putting myself out there as some kind of personal growth expert. I really wanted to be able to share what I was, you know, what I'd been through and what I was learning, but also learn from other people who had dealt with many of the same things. So for me, it was very important to create a site where there wasn't sort of a leader-follower dynamic, but more a sense of a peer-to-peer feeling, you know, as opposed to me creating authority and a sense of removal. I wanted it to be a place where it facilitated a sense of genuine connection. And I'd spent a long time in my life isolating myself, feeling ashamed of some of the things I'd been through. So it felt really important to me for this to be a place where we could all sort of share our shared experiences and bond over our, you know, the things we've been through, and in doing so feel less alone with our challenges. So that's the crux of the blog, really, just a space for people to connect over their shared experiences and share their insights. And over time, the site now has community forums where people can, you know, share what they're going through and ask other community members for advice. And there's also a fun and inspiring section where I share just uplifting artwork and videos. And so that's the site.
That sounds really great. Peer-to-peer shared experience.
Yes.
Now this week that's really wonderful. Really, really wonderful. Now this week we're going to be talking with Lori about self-compassion. So Lori, how does self-compassion fit into the rest of your mission?
I feel like my core mission with Tiny Buddha is to help people feel less alone with their pain and better able to grow through it and beyond it. And I think that self-compassion is kind of crucial in this regard, because a lot of times we'll cause ourselves to suffer by beating ourselves up over things that hurt. So basically, we compound the, you know, difficult experiences by treating ourselves really cruelly in response to it, instead of giving ourselves the kind of, you know, kind, supportive, loving, nurturing comfort we might get from friends and family. So I think that's, you know, self-compassion in this way is kind of the foundation of healing and happiness, because life's going to give us difficult things to deal with no matter what. We're going to encounter struggles, and there's going to be pain in life, but we can, you know, decrease our suffering by changing how we treat ourselves in response to what we're going through.
I see. Now, this is something you teach, self-compassion. I understand from reading a lot of your works and looking at what it shows up on the website as well, that self-compassion didn't come easy for you. Can you tell some of our listeners some of the struggles that you faced to get where you are today?
Sure. Self-compassion did not come easily to me because not only did I not love myself for most of my life, I spent the majority of the early part of my life absolutely hating myself, just a really deep sense of inferiority and self-loathing. And when I was younger, I struggled starting around 12 with depression, bulimia, and like I mentioned, just intense self-loathing. I had been bullied in school, and I had some other things that happened when I was younger that led me to see myself as somebody who was fundamentally worthless and a bad person. I spent most of my high school years in therapy, but then as I moved on to college, despite all this work I was doing on myself, really things only got worse. And I spent most of my time in college actually just self-destructing from binging and purging and binge drinking, and I was over-medicated. You know, I always felt like I was a pharmaceutical guinea pig is the phrase I used to use, because I was on all kinds of mood stabilizers and antidepressants and anti-anxiety medication. Basically, just tons of different things. Everything I was doing in my life was to make sure I didn't have to feel. And I was in this sort of persistent state of numbness with just this really explosive pain right beneath the surface. You know, I was holding on to a lot of anger toward other people and misdirected anger toward myself. And it was actually in my senior year of college where things really came to a head. I had my first stint in an eating disorder hospital. It was about 2 weeks that I was there. And they ended up kicking me out because they thought that based on my resistance to treatment and my continued destructive behaviors that I was beyond help. So after that, I went, you know, in and out of a number of psychiatric hospitals because there was only one eating disorder ward in my state and they wouldn't take me back. But none of these hospitals were really well equipped to handle the complex combination of issues that I had. I ended up spending 3 months in a residential treatment center for my eating disorder, and that was really a big step for me. It was kind of, I guess in a way, the end of one journey and the start of another, because I had finally become stabilized with all these really dangerous behaviors. But I was really just starting to peel the surface, to get under the surface of the limiting beliefs and the pain and everything that led me to do the things I had done. So that was kind of some of the darker days of my eating disorder and my depression. And then into my 20s, I continued to struggle, but in different ways. And I guess what it was is by my mid-20s, I felt that I was starting to make progress, real progress. You know, slow progress, but progress. I was starting to understand why I hated myself so intensely. And, I was becoming more immersed in self-help and personal development. And it was really about peeling apart the layers of what had contributed to my beliefs about myself. It was about 6 years after the residential treatment center that I started Tiny Buddha, and I think it's been a long journey, and as with all of us, it's ongoing. You know, you keep learning and growing and getting deeper to the core of the issues that make it hard for us to be kind to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to be peeling apart those layers with you. This has been an amazing journey. As people read your books, they'll come to understand more, and I really encourage everybody to, as we proceed through the break, to listen in intently, because there's really some exciting conversation coming up. We need to take a break right now. I'd like to offer this challenge to our listeners. If you know someone whose acts, no matter how small, are making a difference in the lives of other people in the world, we'd love to hear about them. Tweet us at #BetterWorldians so we can let the Better Worldian community know. We'll talk more with Laurie Duchesne when we come back. In the meantime, you can learn more at BetterWorldians.com and follow our live tweets at Twitter.com/BetterWorldians. We'll be right back.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Be part of a miracle this holiday season. Visit colorwithkindness.com and watch an uplifting 2-minute video that illustrates the power of kindness. When the video reaches 1 million views, funds will be released to Cure International for surgeries enabling 10 kids to walk for the first time. Cure is the largest provider of reconstructive surgery to disabled children in the emerging world. Give these kids the gift of a lifetime. Watch and share the video at colorwithkindness.com.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
This is Better Worldians Radio, with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
Hi, we're back live with Laurie Deshane. We're going to talk more with Laurie about self-compassion in just a moment. But first, we'd like to share some big news here at Better Worldians Radio. We've recently launched, as many of you know, our worldwide kindness campaign. In the process, we're challenging Better Worldians around the globe to watch a 2-minute video that illustrates the power of kindness. When it reaches 1 million views, we'll release funds for surgeries that will allow 10 kids in the developing world to walk for the first time. Please watch the video, share it with your friends at colorwithkindness.com. Once again, that's colorwithkindness.com. And now let's welcome back Laurie and Mary Sue.
Hi, Laurie.
Hi there.
Hi. You know, you've had such an interesting life journey, just really transformational. I'm wondering, did you have a sudden light bulb moment when you decided to change your life, or was it more of a gradual change?
I think for me it was really very gradual, especially since I started with, you know, I was 12 years old when I first started therapy, and that's a really young age to realize you need to make some changes in your life. So that, I think that it, I always sort of felt like it was a journey of two steps forward and one step back. But I do know that there was a moment where I had sort of a really big life-changing epiphany. It was, I was living in New York. It was a few years after I'd gotten out of that treatment center where I spent a few months getting extensive treatment for my eating disorder. And I had sort of gotten myself into a place where I was living a very isolated existence, and I lived by myself in a 7x7 tiny little dorm-style Manhattan room in a somewhat seedy, dangerous building. And I was working as a part-time telemarketer, and I didn't really have many friends, and I was kind of hiding away from the world because, as I mentioned, even though I had done a lot of work to, you know, reduce or eliminate my dangerous behaviors, I still had all these fears and beliefs and limiting beliefs about myself and my place in the world. And I found a quote one night. I don't remember exactly where, but I found the quote, life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you respond to it. That for me was huge, because up to that moment in time, I was kind of, you know, lost in these obsessive thoughts about all the things I'd experienced and everything I've done and everything I'd been through and everything that had happened to me. And I was sort of defining and limiting myself with these stories. But at that moment, I considered that instead of being ashamed of where I'd been, I could be proud of what I did going forward, that I could focus on this moment and the choice of right now and radically alter my perception of myself and, as a result, what I chose to do. So that was a really big turning point for me. Now, you know, finding this quote and having this epiphany didn't necessarily mean that my life changed right then, right away, but that certainly was a turning point for me in my perception of myself and what I chose to do going forward.
That's really interesting that a quote really ignited that insight into you.
And, well, you know, part of my love for quotes. It's amazing. Sometimes, you know, just the right insight hits you in a certain way, and it can be a game changer.
Yeah, I do love your quotes. I see them every day on Facebook. And, you know, in your book, Tiny Buddha's Guide to Loving Yourself, you say that not everyone is going to have, you know, big struggles, you know, the ones that were as tough as yours, but that everyone can find some practical wisdom, you know, in the books and in the website. Can you tell what that is a little bit to our listeners?
Well, I think the reason that everyone can find practical wisdom on the website and in the book is because we really all deal with the same universal challenges. I mean, to different degrees and in different ways, but I see it all the time on the site, and it's somebody will share their own specific story of maybe overcoming low self-esteem or a difficult childhood or, you know, issues with their relationship or whatever their unique situation will be, and hundreds of people will chime in through comments on the blog and on the social media sites saying how they can relate to that story. So even if they haven't experienced the same set of circumstances, there's something universal in there that speaks to them, whether it's beliefs of not being good enough or, you know, struggles communicating. There's some kind of universal seed. So I guess that even though the details of the story differ, often the subtext is the same for all of us, our feelings, our thoughts, beliefs, our assumptions. And, you know, with the site and the book, I think that even though, you know, there might be some stories people relate to more than others, odds are they'll be able to relate to the thoughts and the feelings in most of them, and that will make the insight universally applicable.
Yes, I think the fact that people really share those moments with everyone makes everyone feel that they can share their most intimate moments, too. So that's just great.
Absolutely, and I've seen that with the site is that I, you know, one person will share a story about a certain topic, and then that inspires someone else to share a story, and then that inspires someone else, and there's just kind of a domino effect where the authenticity is contagious and it spreads.
You know, you also say in your book that you really have to feel good about yourself, and you must love yourself first as you really are today. In other words, you know, have this self-love, have self-compassion. How did you learn that lesson?
I think I realized that if I could treat myself like I wanted other people to treat me, you know, if I could see my needs as priorities and be kinder to myself in my head and cut myself some slack when I struggled, something I didn't do very well, then I could strengthen myself, you know, kind of in the same way that a parent, their nurturing can help their child grow and flourish. That if I wanted to grow and flourish in the world, if I wanted to do things I felt proud of, you know, I had to first take good care of myself. I think that I always thought it would go the other way around, that I would do things that I felt proud of and then I would deserve my own love. But I realized that it just doesn't work that way, because you have to build yourself up to be able to go out in the world and do the kind of things that you'll feel good about. So you have to be good to yourself before you can, you know, do the things that you then feel good about doing. It was kind of, I learned that it kind of could create a loop of good feelings. You know, if I was good to myself, I'd feel good. And then because I felt good, I'd do things that, you know, I would feel good about. And then, you know, it kind of created this cyclical loop. Now, of course, it's a lot easier to recognize that than it is to actually do it. Applying it a lot harder than, you know, realizing, oh, you know, if I could just be a little nicer to myself, that would make all the difference. But I think recognizing that you have to start with the kindness to yourself to then sort of, you know, be able to continually be the kind of person you want to be. It's a great insight because it gives you maybe a stronger motivation to change the way you're talking to yourself, because it's not as though if you cut yourself some slack, you're not pushing yourself and you won't do things you're proud of. No, if you're good to yourself, you're going to be better able to do things that you're proud of. So that's what it was for me at first, was just sort of this realization that the way I saw it was backwards.
I really like that idea of the do-good loop. You know, you do good and you feel good about what you're doing. That's what we're all about at Better Worldian Radio, too. One of the chapters in your books talks about the obsession a lot of us have with fixing ourselves and, you know, making ourselves better and better and better. Can you talk about the importance of realizing that we're all okay right now, but we do have the room to grow?
Sure. I think that it's common for a lot of people that get into self-help to think that they need to, and by they I mean us because I've definitely been there, but think that we need to fix ourselves. Sort of like, you know, this world of self-help and personal development is the answer to, you know, years of feeling like there was something wrong with us. And I know that was true for me. Like I mentioned before, I thought that I was fundamentally bad, that I wasn't good enough. And, you know, self-help was just very alluring. It was like, okay, I can fix those things. You know, I thought maybe that if I could learn enough and become good enough, then I would never again have to feel the pain and the shame I felt before. But this was just sort of a fallacy because, you know, being human means that we will feel things that hurt at times and we'll go through highs and lows. So if we don't accept our humanity and realize that we're okay just as we are, if we can't embrace that, these things are things that we all deal with, that we all feel down at times, we're all going to feel shame, that we're not going to feel perfect ever. If we can't accept those things, then personal growth and self-help and all of this, it can do more harm than good. Because I think the difference is, you can look at self-help as a healthy goal that comes from your love for yourself and your desire to continually improve with the sense that you're, you know, fundamentally worthy of a lifelong journey of growth. Or you can see it as an unhealthy goal that's based on just this disappointment with yourself, you know, and then you'll kind of always be measuring if you've grown enough to deserve your own, you know, respect and love. And it's just the difference, I guess, comes with your motivation behind wanting to grow. And it's certainly healthier to approach it with the sense that you are okay just as you are. You might be imperfect, as we all are, but you don't need to change to be worthy of love or connection. Growth is not so much because you're not good enough. It's because it's something that we can all do every day, is grow a little and become, you know, more and more who we can be. Not because of something wrong with who we are, but because it's a beautiful thing to embrace lifelong growth.
Right, right. Now, what did you find are some of the biggest hurdles people have for finding self-compassion, self-love?
I think there, you know, I've identified lots of different hurdles in my own experience and from seeing what people have written on the site, but I think there are two big ones that come to mind immediately. One is that most of us, or a lot of us, we don't grow up with really good models for compassion toward ourselves. You know, if we grow up in critical environments with people who are hard on us, then, you know, that's what we learn. We learn to be critical and hard on ourselves. The way that, you know, we see other people treat us is often the way we treat ourselves. And it can be kind of ironic, too, because we might end up feeling really angry towards people who, you know, were critical of us or were hard on us, and yet we can adopt that voice in our own head and just become them without even really realizing it. So I think that's one of the big hurdles is, not having the models for it when we're younger and developing. Mm-hmm. And then the other big one that I think a lot of us experience is that when we grow up, we kind of form these mistaken core beliefs about ourselves based on the things that happened to us. So if you were, like me, bullied in school, you might have concluded that, you know, you were bullied because you weren't good enough. That's why it happened, because there was something wrong with who you were. And then when we have these beliefs that we're not good enough, we might think that we don't deserve self-compassion, or we worry that if we give ourselves self-compassion, then maybe we won't push ourselves and become better than we are, which we think we need to do because we're not good enough. So that's, I think, the second one is that big one, is just these mistaken beliefs that are really hard to overcome.
I agree with you. A lot of people can be held back by the opinions of others, the need for approval. What is some of the advice you've learned for letting that go?
Well, and this is something I have, I guess, with everything that we're discussing, but I certainly have a lot of experience with this because I was a lifelong people pleaser, and approval has always been something that, even to this day, I find myself at times seeking approval from other people. So I know how hard this one is. And I think there are two big things that have helped me that come to mind immediately. One is to recognize that, you know, when we're looking for, when we're excessively seeking approval from other people and fearing their rejection, it has a lot to do with the way we're not giving ourselves approval or how we might be rejecting ourselves. So, for example, it used to be that I was much more insecure about my appearance, you know, with my eating disorder and whatnot. So I was constantly seeking approval and validation regarding my weight or, you know, my hair or anything about my appearance. But since that's something that I no longer struggle with to that same degree, I very rarely seek approval for my appearance. But I may still find sometimes still insecure about the fact that I'm a really emotional person. I might think that that's a flaw of mine, and therefore if I feel that I'm being perceived as over-emotional, I might want approval from somebody that there's nothing wrong with that. But if in those moments I can step back and say, okay, well, why am I not approving myself? You know, why am I judging this about myself? And then I can remind myself that if I wasn't a highly emotional person, maybe I wouldn't have started my website. You know, maybe I wouldn't I wouldn't run Tiny Buddha. So if I can appreciate those things that I'd be tempted to seek approval from others for, then all of a sudden their approval is less important because I'm not depending upon them for my self-esteem to be okay with something. So that's one thing. And the other thing that I've learned, and this is a hard one, I've learned to see it as a positive sign if some people do not like me. Because I realize that if I'm being myself, not everyone's going to like me. You know, there are people that I might like more than others, and that's just the way the world works. When people are genuinely being who they are, some people will like you and some won't. But if you're being a chameleon because you want to be liked by everybody, and which I've done many, many times, odds are you're not being authentic. And that's going to make it hard to form genuine relationships because you're not going to really attract anyone based on who you are. You're going to attract everyone based on who you think they want you to be. So that's the second one for me, is to remind myself if somebody's not quite clicking with me, that maybe that's not a sign that I'm doing something wrong, but rather a sign that I'm just being who I am and I'm not a good match for them for a friendship.
Isn't that something? I love that. For anyone listening who might be facing the same kind of struggles, you know, that you face, what would be your personal advice so that they can have a first step? How can they take their first step towards the self-love, self-compassion?
Well, I think the first step would be recognizing some of the reasons why you struggle with giving yourself compassion. I guess start with why. You know, someone might say, oh, well, I'm not good enough, or I'm a bad person, or I haven't done enough, or whatever it is. And if you can really identify those things that are your sticking points in your head, kind of the repetitive obsessive thoughts that we go through, or in what ways we're hardening ourselves, if you can identify those beliefs and thoughts that limit you, then you can start countering them. So, for example, you know, as I mentioned with my bullying experience, I realized that was one of the main things that contributed to my belief that I wasn't good enough. And when I could step back and change my perception of that event, and I could say to myself, okay, well, that didn't happen because I wasn't good enough. It happened because kids are all going through the same hard times, and oftentimes people bully other kids because they're hurting too. You know, and because I was bullied, that doesn't mean that I deserved it. It meant that, you know, I was, you know, in a vulnerable time, and kids are all dealing with difficult things, and, you know, kind of changing my understanding of the past that shaped these beliefs that contributed to my inability to love myself. So I think that it is a very difficult step. It takes a lot of time and work to really understand what those internal blocks are, but I think it's the most important step, and it's a lifelong process. I think that we continually uncover new limiting beliefs, and that to really adopt new beliefs takes effort. It takes the time to identify a different way to see where we've been and understand it, and it takes the time and effort to actually start living in these new beliefs about ourselves. No, it's not that I'm not good enough. It's just that I'm human like everybody else, and I'm doing the best I can. So I think that's a good first step.
Wonderful. Your work has helped so many people. Are there any special stories that you can share for our listeners that really made you realize that what you were doing was making a difference in their lives?
I think what really reminds me that Tiny Buddha makes a difference is not so much the stories that people share with me, but seeing the way people share, just the way that people share their stories with each other in either the blog comments or on the social media sites or on the forums. When I see the way that people are opening up to each other and helping each other, I feel that the site has made a difference because it's, you know, it's not just that I'm helping people. I've enabled people to help themselves and each other. I've helped enable them to do that. And that means to me that the site is bigger than me, and that's something that I feel really proud of.
You should feel very proud of that.
Thank you.
And, you know, there's a lot of, I've seen there's a lot of guest writers on your website, you know, Tiny Buddha, who I imagine have learned, you know, that you've learned things from. Have you had a recent epiphany or a special one that you might want to share?
You know, this one isn't necessarily recent, but there's one that stuck with me on the site, something that was really a way of looking at things that I had never considered before. There was a post that a woman shared her experience with her mother, and she shared how she was angry with her mother because of some of her shortcomings as a parent. And then she shared that her mother once said to her, "At least I never told you that you were worthless." And she realized then that her mother had heard this a lot growing up, that her mother had told her mother, you know, that she was worthless. And even though she made mistakes as a parent, she didn't repeat this cycle. She didn't continue the cycle of that type of emotional abuse. And in recognizing this, that she had kind of fought against these instincts, you know, she was able to focus less on what she thought her mother had done wrong, you know, focus less on what she thought were her mother's mistakes, and she was able to focus on her appreciation for the mistakes she didn't make that she could have. And I think this really spoke to me, and it really helped me because it made me think a little more and have even more compassion for people who I may have felt angry toward, you know, because I considered that maybe they too had been hurt in ways that I couldn't even fathom. And even if it didn't seem like it at the time, maybe they genuinely were doing their best. That one really stuck with me.
Well, we need to take another break at this time. I can't wait to when we're back. But when we do come back, we'll talk a lot more with Laurie Deshane and hear a little more about this do-good loop, this ability with sharing peer-to-peer, and basically learning more about overcoming mistaken beliefs. You can ask Laurie a question yourself after the break. You can do that several ways. First, you can call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. Or you can also send us an email at radio@betterworldians.com. If you prefer, you can also tweet us at twitter.com/betterworldians. We'll be right back.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Be part of a miracle this holiday season. Visit ColorWithKindness.com and watch an uplifting two-minute video that illustrates the power of kindness. When the video reaches 1 million views, funds will be released to Cure International for surgeries enabling 10 kids to walk for the first time. Cure is the largest provider of reconstructive surgery to disabled children in the emerging world. Give these kids the gift of a lifetime. Watch and share the video at ColorWithKindness.com.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
Hi, we're back with Laurie Deshane, the founder of Tiny Buddha. We'd love it if you'd call in with a question for Laurie. You can call 1-866-472-5788. Again, that's 1-866-472-5788. Or if you prefer, email us at radio@betterworldians.com or tweet us at twitter.com/betterworldians.
Hi, Laurie. This is Greg. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. So I know you have an e-course available now called Recreate Your Life Story, Change the Script, and Be the Hero. I was hoping you could talk a bit about why writing the story of your own life is so important.
Sure. Well, the e-course is, you know, it has sort of a film component with the change the script element. And It guides people to see themselves as the protagonist of their life in the same way that we, you know, see the heroes in film and all these movies that we love. And I think a lot of times we don't see ourselves in the same way that we might see, you know, the hero of either our favorite movie or our favorite book. Because when we do, you know, watch a movie or read a book, we tend to relate to the hero, you know, and we root for them. We see their humanity, we see their struggles and their weaknesses and their imperfections. And maybe because we see ourselves in them, we root for them to succeed. We believe in them. We empathize with them. And that's something that we don't always do for ourselves. We don't always empathize with ourselves and root for ourselves despite our, you know, struggles and our weaknesses and our flaws. So the importance of writing our story comes down to basically, you know, in order for us to change the things we do, we have to change first our perception of ourselves and what we've already done. We have to identify any of the blocks in our mind, you know, the beliefs, the thoughts, the assumptions, anything that prevents us from seeing ourselves with that sense of, you know, empathy and possibility. And so that's really what the course does. It helps people change their perception of themselves so that they believe in their potential and their worth, and they're able to make the changes they want for their life going forward.
Mm-hmm. Can we all change our script? Can we all be a hero?
I absolutely believe so. Because I think we all have the ability to, you know, we all carry around these stories about the events that have happened in our lives. You know, we might look at something that has happened and make meaning out of what happened. You know, this means I'm not good enough, or this happened because I always fail, or this happened because I'm not good with relationships. You know, and we can all take a look back at the things that we've interpreted in negative ways and change our understanding of what those events meant. And in doing so, in changing our understanding of what the events have meant, we can change our understanding of who we are in the world and what we can do going forward. And I do think that's something that is possible for anybody.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it seems like in some ways it's a summary for, you know, the whole kind of turnaround in your life. You know, what kind of difference has changing the script and being the hero made in your life, Lori?
For me personally, what difference has it made?
Yeah.
Well, I noticed, you know, really, I don't think it happened exactly at that point where I found that quote in New York that life is 10% what happens to you and 90% how you respond to it. I think it was kind of gradually after that point that I realized that I lived my whole life seeing myself in just a very sad way. You know, I defined myself as this weak person who had emotional issues. You know, this person who had an eating disorder, this person who struggled with depression, this person who made a fool out of myself in relationships and continually did things to disrespect myself. And as a consequence, I thought I was a person who deserved the disrespect because of all the things I had done. And when I saw myself through this very negative, defeatist, limiting mindset, it was paralyzing. It's really difficult to do anything that you feel proud of when you feel nothing but shame for yourself. And when I was able to look back on my stories that I've been telling myself and instead empathize with myself and understand that I was doing my best based on where I was at the given time, and that other people, given my same circumstances, might have struggled in the same way, if not maybe even more so, you know, in empathizing with myself in that way, and then also taking responsibility for my part in the, you know, things that had happened, but doing it with a sense of kindness and love, I was able to see myself not as somebody to be ashamed of, somebody to hide, which is what I did when I lived in New York, but rather somebody to be proud of and someone who can go out in the world and do things without, you know, with a sense of, I guess, pride in where I'd been, you know. And so that was a big shift for me, and it's what ultimately enabled me to start small in putting myself out there and encouraging other people to do the same thing. And I know I would not have done that if I never considered the possibility that it wasn't a fact that I was someone who should feel ashamed, that it wasn't a fact that I was a bad person, that it wasn't a fact that I was a weak person. I had to be able to let go of those beliefs and consider the possibility that I could be more than that, to do more than that.
Well, you know, the big focus here at Better Worldians Radio is making the world a better place, you know, and we believe that that starts with being the best you that you can be. So my final question to you before we take some questions from our listeners is, how does self-compassion and writing your own life story fit into making it a better world for everyone?
Well, I think that ultimately, you know, I do believe in that be the change you wish to see in the world. And I think really the best that any of us can do is try our best to uncover our own blocks and our own issues and to grow into, you know, a greater sense of acceptance of ourselves. And I think that when we do that, when we become more accepting of ourselves and more loving, then we become better able to be accepting and loving of other people. Because I ultimately, the way we treat others is, you know, the way we treat ourselves. It's all connected. You know, if we treat ourselves harshly and judgmentally, odds are we're going to do the same thing to other people, because that's, you know, the way we know to relate to others. So I do think that developing compassion for ourselves and changing our perception of our journey is crucial to making the world a better place. And even if that means making our own corner of the world a better place, right where we stand, that can make a huge difference. And that's what I strive to do. You know, I don't really think about making the world a better place per se. I just I do my best to learn and grow and to help other people do the same thing. And I think if we focus on those efforts, the outcome will take care of itself.
Yeah, you know, I agree. I think you are making the world a better place. You know, we really believe that here, that, you know, that change begins with you, and that by making yourself better, you know, you're going to be more able, you're going to be more charged and aware of yourself and be able to do more good in the world. So I think just working on yourself and helping people work on themselves really does help make the world a better place. I think it's a great time then to take a question from some other people out in the world, some of our listeners. We have a call from Jody from Minnesota. Jody, we have you live with Lori DeShane on Better Worldians Radio. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I do. Hi, Lori. After reading your book, I know that you made a lot of big moves, especially going from New York to San Francisco, and it was full of a lot of new beginnings, and you didn't feel like you always had a lot of direction. I find myself kind of in a similar position in my life right now, and I'm wondering what advice you have for grounding yourself.
Sure. Well, one thing that really helped me a lot was yoga. That was something that I found in New York. And at the time when I, you know, I was feeling kind of scattered and lost and just not sure where I was going or what I was doing or what my next steps were. But the beautiful thing about yoga is, you know, it helps you become more present. And it's for me to get out of my head in that way. You know, I don't know if you can relate to this, but when you're not sure what your next steps are, it's very easy to spend all your time focused on that, and that can really kind of limit you from finding what your next steps would be because you're so caught up in those worrying, fearful thoughts. So to adopt any kind of practice that helps you be more, you know, in the present, whether it's meditation or yoga or anything to that, anything like that, I think is very important to be able to just kind of accept and be where you are. And I think that's a hard thing to do when you're facing uncertainty. I know it was for me, but I remember once my yoga instructor in New York, she said to me, I said to her, you know, I have no idea what I want to do in life. Feels like everything I try, I don't like. And I was really frustrated with that. And that made it hard for me to be in the moment because in my mind, the moment was just a big question mark. And she said to me, well, you know, you may feel like that's a discouraging thing, but you're figuring out what you don't want. And that's progress. So I think that in tandem with some type of mindfulness practice, I guess being able to accept that, you know, when you're not sure where you're going and you feel lost, it's not like you're wasting your time until you figure it out. You're actually at a very valuable part of the journey. It's part of what helps you figure it out. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, you don't see it until you're, you know, in hindsight looking back. But you will at some point, you know, look back and say, oh, yeah, at that time where I felt so lost and confused and I wanted so badly to be somewhere else, that was, you know, a part of the puzzle that got me to the somewhere else. So maybe that is something that I would recommend if you're able to do, is to just focus on the value of this moment, that this, even though you don't know yet how all the dots are going to connect, this dot is important. You just don't see, you don't know yet how.
Well, thank you for calling in today, Jody, and thank you for that great answer, Lori. We also have some questions that came in from Facebook. Kayla says that she has struggled with depression, but she's getting help and doing a lot better with that. She says what she still struggles with, though, is self-hate. She asks, I know people, such as my friends and father, see me as a smart and beautiful woman, but I can't help but think that they are lying. I just constantly don't feel love for myself or feel good enough to be myself. Any wise wisdom to help me out?
Sure. Well, I have two thoughts on that. First, I'm going to go back to what I said earlier, is to just start with why. You know, why do you think you're not beautiful? Why do you think you're not smart? Odds are you can identify some events that contribute to these beliefs about yourself, and you might be able to see new ways to interpret those events. So, for example, if you were, maybe you struggled in school and you concluded it's because you weren't smart, but maybe you could tell yourself instead, well, you know, that class environment didn't suit my learning style, so it didn't mean I wasn't smart enough. It's because I needed a different structure to flourish. And you know, this is obviously, it can be challenging work because you have to really think about, okay, what are the different events that contributed to these beliefs? And you have to be willing to consider there's a new way to interpret those to support healthier beliefs about yourself. But I'd say one other thing I'd recommend is to maybe put yourself in your friend's shoes. You know, picture that your friend is coming to you and you're telling her that she's beautiful and smart and she thinks you're lying. You know, odds are, you know, in your eyes, you do see her as somebody with flaws and imperfections because, you know that we're all human, but in spite of it, you see the good things first. So it's not necessarily that you're lying to her. You're just choosing to focus on the parts about her that are beautiful because you love her. And that's what love is. It's seeing the beauty in other people. So maybe if you're able to recognize that, you know, if you were to say these things to her, you wouldn't be lying. Maybe you can consider for a second what it feels like to be in her shoes and to see so much beauty in you and to want so badly for you to see what she sees. You know, I think maybe stepping outside yourself in that way could help you consider the possibility that even if you're human and you're flawed and you're imperfect, you still have a lot of great qualities about you. And maybe those things that you consider weaknesses are actually strengths too. Kind of like I was saying earlier about, you know, me feeling like I'm over emotional and maybe that's a weakness. Well, maybe it is and maybe it's a strength too. It's not black and white. So perhaps those two things will help.
Well, thank you for that question, Kayla. Another question that came in was from Erin. She said, if you could share something with your daughter, if and when you have one, about life, what would it be? And she also said, love you, Lori. Hugs and kisses.
Oh, so nice. Wow, share something with my daughter. I think there's so much. I don't even know where to begin. That's a great question. But I think that the main thing I'd want to impress upon my daughter is that she's strong and capable. You know, I think that for a long time I always thought that when I had kids I would, you know, I had these thoughts, I guess, that were kind of responses to my own life experience, how I was going to build them up and how I was going to, you know, tell them that they're beautiful and worthy of love. And I still want to do those things, but I think it, obviously, but I think another thing I've realized too is that in addition to wanting to build my children up, I want to give them, help them learn to build themselves up. You know, I want to make sure that I'm giving them the tools to love themselves, you know, to do for themselves everything that maybe I would want to do for them. I want to help them be able to do that for themselves.
Well, thank you for that question, Erin. One last question. We only have a couple minutes for this one. And someone from Facebook's self-love page asked, why do people think that self-love is selfishness? And I think it's a great question. We talked about in the studio how we were worried that people would misunderstand the importance of this and mistake it for narcissism, but it's so important. I'm hoping you could say something about that.
Sure. I mean, I think people think of self-love as narcissism for the, you know, we tend to think, oh, if you're going to be giving yourself that kind of, I mean, I guess it's an obvious connection there. We think that loving ourselves might be seen as kind of a selfish, narcissistic thing. But I think that the important thing to realize is that it's only narcissistic if our self-love doesn't happen in tandem with love for other people. You know, right. Narcissism is an excessive focus on yourself. Well, if you're still feeling compassion and love for other people, if you're creating a balance, then that's not narcissistic. It's actually another one of those loops, kind of like I was saying before with the good feeling loop. Feeling good, you do good, you feel good. It's the same with self-love. You know, in order to give people love, we need to first model that for ourselves. We need to lift ourselves up and, you know, the way we treat others, as I mentioned, is a reflection of the way we treat ourselves. So it's actually an act of kindness and compassion for other people to be able to give that to ourselves first. It's kind of like the cliched, overused, put your own mask on before you put someone else's on the airplane. We need to strengthen ourselves to be a source of strength for other people. So it really is connected.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Lori, you are certainly a great example of doing great work here in the world and making
Thank
a
you.
Very big difference in the world. I know that you said, well, you're just taking one little step. Well, frankly, that's what we really encourage everybody to do, is take that one step. To learn more about the e-course, Recreate Your Life Story, Change the Script, and Be the Hero, you can go to recreateyourlife.com. You can also find out more about Lori in a number of ways. Read her books by going to tinybuddha.com, as well as also a number of the books that she has that we've mentioned on the show today. Lori, we'd like to thank you for joining us today on Better Worldians Radio.
Thank you so much. And just one note, it's recreateyourlifestory.com.
I'm sorry, and I'm glad that you corrected me.
In fact, no problem.
A sign from Greg that he was going to interject.
I was just about to do that.
they're always keeping me straight here. I really appreciate that. For our listeners, please join us next week on Better Worldians Radio for a special episode, A Mission to End Bullying. We're going to be talking with Kim Harvey, the founder of Angels and Doves, an anti-bullying organization, and also one of its angel ambassadors, country singer Josie Milner, whose song Not Pretty Enough will be heard live on the air next week, which is sort of a little bit of an anthem for that particular group and its anti-bullying mission. We also have an excellent lineup of guests in the coming weeks, and if you know an unsung Better Worldian who would make a great guest on our show, we urge you to send us an email at radio@betterworldians.com. We'd like to remind everyone that you can also be part of a miracle by simply sharing our video challenge and help heal 10 disabled children. It's that easy. Just go to colorwithkindness.com, watch the video, share it with your friends, and give these kids the gift of a lifetime. We'd like to thank everyone today for listening. You can join the Better Worldian community at betterworldians.com. And until next time, everyone, please, be a Better Worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at BetterWorldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world. Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.